Join the Toronto Holocaust Museum and its partners for a community-wide Yom HaShoah commemoration on Sunday, May 5th. A moving evening of film, candlelighting, music, and a tribute to survivors we've recently lost. Keynote speaker Yoni Berus from Yad Vashem will reflect on Holocaust remembrance post-October 7th. The program is at Beth Emeth Synagogue at 7 p.m. Register at torontoholocaustmuseum.org.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ralph Ben-Murgi. Welcome to Not That Kind of Rabbi, brought to you by the Canadian Jewish News, the CJN, at CJN. As always, I need to reiterate, I'm actually not a rabbi, but if I was, I wouldn't be that kind of rabbi, which I think covers all bases for all kinds of Jewish people, and non-Jewish people, I might add. You know, for a long time, I've been doing a thing that I've and my wife have been calling the New Sabbath Project, and we've been trying to get people to engage. And what we do is we invite people on our Shabbat on a Friday night, regardless of whether they're Jewish or not. We bring them around the table. We do lighting of candles. We do blessings around the table, little wine. And then in true Moroccan tradition, I tear the haks off the challah and dip them in salt and throw them around the table according to people's age. It's a wonderful thing, and it leads to really, the blessings themselves lead to some beautiful conversations. We don't sit around talking about the latest Netflix show after those blessings. We talk about our lives and the idea of 6 days of doing and one day of being. Well, I will also add that at the present moment, I'm writing a book, or attempting to, and it's about the intersection of spirituality and climate change, and how those things work and don't work together. And in that vein, I stumbled upon something that speaks to just about everything I'm thinking about these days, which is the Green Sabbath Project. Take a weekly day of rest. Make it a real Sabbath for you, for Earth. Don't drive, don't shop, don't build. Take a walk, eat with friends, play or read with your kids, sing, meditate, celebrate, contentment. So those are some of the things you see when you go to their site. And something else, which I also had put in my book, funnily enough, is a quote from James Speth, who's the co-founder of Natural Resources Defense Council. He is the chairman and has been a leading environmentalist for many years. He says, and I quote, "I used to think that the top global environmental problems were biodiversity loss, ecosystem collapse, and climate change. I thought with 30 years of good science, we could address these problems. I was wrong. The top environmental problems are selfishness, greed, and apathy. And to deal with these, we need a spiritual and cultural transformation." That's the quote that the Green Sabbath Project uses. The founder and director of the Green Sabbath Project joins me on this edition of Not That Kind of Rabbi, and his name is Jonathan Schorsch. Jonathan, welcome to the program. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I am very good, thanks.
You know, you've brought together all kinds of people over the years, some Jewish, some not Jewish. I know that you had the Archdeacon John Christakis of the Orthodox Christian faith as one of the people you've interacted with. He said something interesting about, you know, you got to kind of, when it comes to Sabbath and how to keep it, just stop, just shut up, just stop thinking things through all the time, and and thinking, now I got to really do something about nothing. And one of the things that you talk about is, you know, when it comes to the environment, do nothing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a cute tagline, it's a cute pitch, but I feel like it's much deeper than that at the same time. You know, we are facing environmental crises that are potentially truly fatal. God forbid, of course, but you know, that's the way it's looking. And like the James Speth quote that you read before, that also I find very moving, a big part of the problem is the way we live. And there are so many aspects of our modern lives, of our contemporary societies, that seem to really have left behind bits of wisdom, traditional or otherwise, or even newfangled wisdom, that I feel is at this point not just urgent, but really kind of life-saving if we only realized it. Things like ritual, for instance, things like play, aesthetics, love of beauty. And in a way, you know, I would argue that one aspect of Shabbat, one aspect of Sabbath is a kind of willingness to encounter, to face a kind of death, you know, face our temporariness, our transitory nature, to face ourselves, really, and what it is that we need in this world, in this life. And, you know, there's a way that the modern West is terrified of death. You know, you see it in the obsession with beauty. You see it in with you know, bodily beauty, female beauty. You see it in the obsession with youth. You know, you see it in the obsession with activity. You see it in the obsession with working out and fitness centers that are open 24/7. And I feel like in some very profound way, one of the things that Shabbat helps us face or helps us get in touch with, as you said before, is you know, doing nothing, just being, just breathing, enjoying friends, enjoying conversation, not about trivia or, you know, the latest on Instagram or Netflix, but hopefully deep things, hopefully real things, things that bring us closer to each other, things that make one another, make ourselves more meaningful to each other, things that help us really remember what's of ultimate importance. And, you know, so without getting too heavy or going into too much more detail, I feel like that's just one of many ways that, you know, this ritual, this ancient practice, which I am fond of calling a spiritual technology, is it really has so much to offer. I feel like it is still so timely, so relevant, has lessons that I feel are so important for so many of us, and in particular, I would argue, for people who are not necessarily religious.
When we talk about these things, I mean, you talked about religion and not religion. You know, often I do work as a spiritual counselor, and people will say, look, I don't believe in God. So first we do the tell me what the God you don't believe in. But we'd also talk about the fact that they believe themselves to be spiritual but not religious, which is now a major movement in the Northern Hemisphere. And what I find interesting about that is I've always sort of talked about spirituality as a relationship issue. Religion is a fitness program. And that Shabbat in and of itself is a fitness regime. That if you do it every week, it becomes how you build your spiritual six-pack and get some strength to come from somewhere when you do things. Because I think Sabbath isn't just about stopping, right? It's about starting. It's about engaging. It's about being of this life and this world. And it's all in the face of, like when you said, you know, we deserve a break, I literally thought of the first McDonald's commercials of, you deserve a break today, so get up and get away to a heart attack of food. And I just thought, even that we've turned into, there is no such thing as rest, there's just reward, right? If I work hard enough, I deserve to eat a bacon double cheeseburger because, you know, that's got good mouthfeel. So there's a lot of things that are in the way of us seeing Shabbat for what it is, including the idea that on the Friday, you turn towards the door, you welcome the bride of Sabbath, you welcome the feminine divine, and the earth and feminine divine, for what we now call Mother Earth in secular language, is really the Shekhinah idea of the feminine divine in other language. How do we find, and how through the Green Sabbath Project do you find a way for us to build ourselves back towards our authentic self?
One of the things I love about this idea, however kooky it might seem, of adapting and adopting something like Shabbat, Sabbath, for our contemporary world, is the fact that it has been indigenous to the West for, 1,700 years, if we consider the, origins of official Christianity sometime around the year 300, roughly, so I think that Shabbat, Sabbath, for Christians is something very, very familiar to many people. Granted, it has become something that is maybe seen with distaste because it's part of organized religion, because of the blue laws, as they were called in the United States, the Sunday laws, it was imposed on people. But, we live in the 21st century and we don't have to do things the way things were done in the past. So I love that this is a ritual that comes from somewhere. As you said, it comes from specific heritages of Jews and Christians in a lesser way or in a more complicated way, perhaps Muslims as well. And therefore, it is not something merely concocted, not that concocted things are necessarily terrible or shallow. And then there are two other things that I want to mention. A practice like Shabbat, to me, is bringing together automatically, inherently, especially if you understand it, the personal, the individual, and the collective, the physical, that is the material, what you do or don't do with your body or with your refrigerator or whatever, as well as the metaphysical. It's bringing together, that which is in some sense technical, in other words, legal, but also something deeply, deeply spiritual. And the last thing I'll say is what I find fascinating about Jewish law, halakha, when I think about it through the lens of our environmental crises, I am fascinated that, when we think about all of the environmental solutions at our disposal, composting, recycling, eating certain kinds of foods and avoiding others, how we drive, what we drive, renewable energies, what kind, etc., that so many of the discussions, so much of the thinking about it, I find strangely, wonderfully, marvelously akin, almost parallel to the way that Jewish law, halakha, operates. What do I mean by that? I mean that from the Jewish perspective, it's not just enough to have a good heart. It's not just enough to have faith, to love. All of those things are, of course, necessary, but they're not sufficient. And according to halakha, according to Jewish law, one of the central things is coming up with the quantification, the technical levels. How much can you eat before you have to say a blessing? When exactly does the Sabbath start? At this point when the sun is setting, before the sun is fully set, when it's fully dark, when does Sabbath end, when there are three stars out, just when it's getting gray and hazy in the sky. There are all kinds of technical questions. I don't know. I feel like there's some kind of meaning in that parallel.
I mean, here's the tricky part, right, is dominion. That tricky line, man has dominion over nature. And the part they don't include is the disclaimer that if we don't treat that responsibility with respect, then we don't deserve it. And we go below the animals in terms of our ability to have dominion. We lose it because we didn't have stewardship. What I do wonder about is how do we, so this is an addiction, this way of life. It's very hard to tell people to stop living in a quasi-aristocratic way, with their single-family dwelling and central heating and food in the fridge from all over the world and just comfort beyond the imagination of anyone who's come before us. And now we're being told, hey, no, come on now. You gotta back off. And I think for a lot of us, it's like, if you put a bottle with gasoline on it and you tried to take it from me, I'd say, hey, that's mine. But look, don't get me wrong. I could quit any time. It's just, I need it right now. And that's sort of where we're at. And right. I'm hoping that you have, In the work you're doing now with the Green Sabbath project, what is it that you're giving us that we can hold on to and say, I need to use these tools? I know there's the idea itself of the Sabbath, but how do you organize and grow and scale your project for larger impact in a national and global way?
Let me go back a step or two in order to get to an answer to your excellent question. Going back to Genesis and this verse about dominion. So Jeremy Cohen wrote a wonderful book many years ago, 20-something years ago, called Be Fruitful and Multiply. And he looked at many of the Jewish commentators to that verse. None of them, absolutely none of them, think that it means that humans control everything, dominate everything, and that we can do whatever we want. So, you know, religion's complicated. Religion has many faces. And, you know, there are, I mean, I'm speaking a little simplistically, but, you know, there's a lot of subjectivity involved here. And, you know, there are, people make choices about which faces of religion they like and which faces of the religion that speak to them and how they what they want to make of their religion. So I don't feel like, as it were, pun intended, you know, these things are written in stone. In other words, there's a lot of room for creativity. There's a lot of room for reimagining religions. And frankly, that's the way the history and the sociology of religion work. You know, change is constant in religion also. And often change is masked as the original intent. So again, I feel like we have a lot of freedom to play. And of course, by play, I mean that very seriously in terms of how we creatively and hopefully meaningfully live our religions. Getting to what you were saying, American culture, just to take, you know, our own culture, North American culture, I'm not sure Canada is so different in this respect. But there's also a lot of strains in American history, in North American history, of a push to the simple life. You know, David Shee wrote a beautiful book maybe 30 years ago called The Simple Life, in which he traced, you know, the Quakers and the Amish and many, the you know, Thoreau and Emerson and many other attempts to remind people of what is important and what is just frivolousness and not so urgent. Now, you're right that given our addiction to all of these things that are external to ourselves, you know, goods, you know, TV networks, cable networks, instant communication to the other side of the world, et cetera, it's very, very hard to ask people to give that up, absolutely. But I would say that any real solutions are not going to be easy. And anyone who thinks that there will be magical solutions that will be somehow, you know, zipless, to use a term from another probably inappropriate context, but whatever, you know, they're deluding themselves. So, yes, there are technical fixes that we need to implement. There are scientific fixes, new technologies, new policy making, new kinds of econometric thinking, et cetera, et cetera. But I would argue that with all of that, there must be also spiritual modes of addressing this, personal modes of address that are meaningful to individuals. I don't think many people are going to live truly environmental, truly sustainable lives if they haven't really internalized green values. So then the question becomes, how do you internalize green values? I don't know. Are people going to come to love recycling? Are people going to come to love, you know, wave motion energy generation? Maybe, you know, but I think what generates the will to live sustainably is having those values internalized and becoming meaningful to you through the things that, for instance, religion is very, very good at. Right? Ritual, you know, interpretation, communities of interpretation, communities that do things together. Religion is very, very good at uniting people to commit to goals, especially long-term intergenerational goals.
The way this economy works, the way we work, is to atomize us, to separate us, to make sure that if there's 40 houses, there's 40 lawnmowers, to stay away from each other. And I think Shabbat is kind of a subversive act of saying, I will build community regardless of your desire to keep me in my pen, buying my feed for my family until I die. Yes. So I see it as subversion in itself. But one of the, you know, and the idea that we ourselves are commodities, we are being bought and sold at this very moment on algorithms throughout the world. So we have become, it's a fight, I think, between the two, between being separate from each other and coming together in community. So I love Shabbat for that, but I also, I'm still trying to figure out, how do we take this conversation and make it something that catches fire? That, that what are you doing? Because I'm sure you sit there thinking, how do we do this? Because it's a wonderful idea, but we're so conditioned against it that it's sort of like, that's nice. You know, it's even like the ideas of recycling. What am I doing sitting here sorting, individually being responsible for sorting garbage that is non-recyclable out of garbage that is recyclable that but won't be recycled so that I become this sideshow of what environmentalism is supposed to be instead of actually being part of something that truly changes the way the world works. So what is a strategy you're using in the Green Sabbath Project that you think can scale this up so that more people can avail themselves of it?
I say to myself very often and to those around me who tolerate me, we talk about consumers and consumers, you know, we're all consumers, but that's nonsense. We're the consumed actually. And, that's exactly as you say, Shabbat is subversive because it brings us back to our sovereign selves. Hopefully we do not belong to the economy. We do not belong to our employer. What we try to do with the Green Sabbath Project is emphasize those kinds of things. You know, there are alternative perspectives. There are alternative traditions, you know, whether you talk about the Luddites or the hippies, there are a lot of various small scale cooperatives, the kibbutz movement, but also in the West, you know, there are all kinds of people who have been willing to experiment in amazingly fertile, creative, playful ways. We have a real panoply, a whole range of different organizations, kind of, as we jokingly say, doing nothing together, you know, in their own way, each doing some kind of event, whether it's a walking meditation in the woods, whether they're reading nature poetry together. In Berlin this past October, we had a group that, and I love this, it, you know, because I wouldn't have expected it. We had this place called the Institute for Bodily and Sexual Research, which does a lot of things that are, you know, about S&M and bondage and things that, you know, okay, are up that alley. And there was a choreographer there who loved the idea of the Green Sabbath, non-Jewish guy, you know, someone who probably has 400 piercings, who's super, you know, in the contemporary world. And they did, he choreographed a beautiful event where they did very, very slow movement, very, very meditative movement, including, you know, what we would call, you know, corpse position, corpse pose of just lying on the floor. And that was their Green Sabbath event. And I loved it. You know, we leave every organization, every community free to do things however they want, that what a Green Sabbath yeah, yeah. them. And my dream now, what I've been working on now, and I'd really love to find, and if you can help me with this or any of your listeners, I would love it. I want to find communities, organizations, neighborhoods, maybe small towns that are willing to take this on as, a real-time experiment. And I would love to speak with the stakeholders and figure out, well, what would a Green Sabbath mean to us? What would it mean to your community, right? What does it mean stopping public transportation? Does it mean bringing out tables to the public square and having a potluck dinner that's local and vegan? Does it mean doing, a meditation in the woods? Does it mean singing a cappella, you know, Wendell Berry's poems put to music? Some of them have been set to music, you know? So again, I have no particular vision of you have to do this, you have to do that. Ultimately, what I mean is however you keep a day of rest, however you keep a day of service weekly, foreground the environment, put nature front and center, put the climate crisis front and center. If you're going to have a sermon, make it about something green, you know, so that's really my goal.
GreenSabbathProject.net, and people can get in touch with Jonathan Schorsch. I'm kind of stuck on the S&M Shabbat, you know, on the seventh day thou shalt not spank. But I love talking to you. I want to believe that more and more people can attract themselves to what I think is the best export of Judaism, which is Shabbat. It's not just one of the Ten Commandments. It's one of the most beautiful ideas that we have. And it could be one of the gateways to us saving ourselves from ourselves in this crazy fight we're having with the earth. As Barry Lopez said, humanity is running away from home.
Right,
so
exactly.
Maybe this is a way for us to get back to home. Jonathan, exactly. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Be well.
Thanks for listening to Not That Kind of Rabbi. If you enjoyed your time with us, we'd love for you to subscribe to this show wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Ralph Ben-Murgi. Our show is produced and edited by Michael Freeman. We're part of the CJN Podcast Network. And to support our work with a tax-deductible donation, all you have to do is visit thecjn.ca/donate. Take care of each other. Bye.